I'm switching up the lane, girl. Pulling up beside you, wanna ask you what's your name, girl. But you're going too fast. Baby, slow it down so we can make the moment last, girl. Cause you're a rider. When I saw you, baby girl, I knew you were alive.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We are once again outside of our world headquarters here at the Be Better podcast, and we have come back to our friends over here at Cycle Health, and we have a new person with us today. Today we have with us talking is Betsy Graham. How are you?
Hi, Chris.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm feeling good today. How about you?
That's good. So thank you for letting us use the new microphones and earphones here.
Pretty slick, huh?
I know. So you guys have, first of all, top-notch everything and, you know, bottom to top. And when I saw you guys having these microphones, I was like, oh, do I need to go out and buy new stuff? But I'm anxious to see how much more professional I feel now. And how it changes the quality of, maybe it makes this a better show.
Well, you're already a good show because you're a good interviewer and easy to talk to.
Aww.
And this, I should be clear that this equipment is lent to us, yeah, by a generous organization that's letting us borrow it. So no, we don't have top-notch everything. We have homespun everything.
Yeah, but you guys have top-notch people. That's always the best.
Top-notch people and high aspirations. And the events, I think, end up looking top-notch, but it's all very homespun, like cooked up in your mama's kitchen kind of homespun.
Well, and that's kind of like when I walked into the office today, because it was you and Tony and your three interns basically crafting, like handcrafting. I saw scissors and stickers, and you guys are handcrafting. Were those invitations that were being sent out?
No.
Or what was?
So as kids are signing up for our Breakaway Kids Try, which is August 18th, the swim, bike, run obstacle race that we do in the summer, we send them a summer training challenge.
Ooh.
And the training challenge is a full color poster with stickers where they track their miles and swim, bike, and run toward the goal of 140.6 miles over the summer. And so we were getting that mailing ready for the 120 kids who are already signed up.
Oh my goodness. How many kids are allowed into that race, or how many can you have?
So our goal is 700 this year. And we, in some ways we could take more than that, but we want to keep it efficient and safe and have ample parking for folks. So we're always concerned about like what would be the what would be critical mass, and that what would be the point where we would want to cut things off. So I think 700 is probably a good target for that race.
All right, so I got to get my kids signed up pretty quick.
Do that.
I think we signed up late last year, and it was like I got the mean mug, like. But they enjoyed it. It was a beautiful day last year.
It was a beautiful day. Oh. And one of the most stunning pictures to come out of the day was with you and your kids.
What?
Yeah, you're in the middle of your two boys and you're hugging on them. And they look ready to race. And you look like a happy, proud dad.
I love all aspects of that. And I gushed about this with Tony a little bit. But I've got a video of Julian, my youngest son, in the swim portion, because it's an out and back on the swim.
Yeah.
And there's right before the turnaround, there's that big swim mat that they have to get out and, you know, climb over.
If they want to. Yep.
If they want to. Yep. Well, they better not swim under it, because that would be scary. But I remember having like a little debrief with Julian. I'm like, okay, Julian, we're going to make this epic. So I waited for it. And he actually executed it specifically how we talked about it. He got out, climbed up, cannonball.
Oh, and you got it on video?
Got it on video.
Oh, I need to see that.
Yeah, he cannonballed off the back end. I was like, yes, he totally did it. It's like, you just make that epic. You know, that was such a great day. And there's just all those things, those little things that make it fun for kids and makes them want to come back every year.
You know, that obstacle in the water in particular, and some of the others too, but we learned a lesson from a friend in Delano, Steve King. He's the founder of Landscape Structures. They're the playground people. Lots of playgrounds you go to have his equipment, and he builds his equipment in a way that it's not always obvious to kids the quote right way to use the equipment.
Okay.
It's left to their imagination how to utilize it. And so Julian doing a cannonball is one of maybe a dozen fun ways that I've seen kids use that human lily pad in the race course, at the Breakaway Kids Try. And from Steve, we just learned that, when you ask kids to use their imagination about a playset or an obstacle, that you're waking something up in them that, you know, in a lot of ways is dormant otherwise.
Yeah. So, you know, let me kind of back us up a little bit here, and ask us, you and Tony found each other quite a bit ago, because you kind of came into the program, into kids in the kids space, before Cycle Health.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
So give me a little bit of the backstory. Like how'd you meet Tony?
So, I was a stay-at-home mom for the most part, although I had been a high school English teacher. And
oh, where'd you teach English?
At Litchfield High School.
Oh, wow.
Litchfield, Minnesota.
Yeah, I know where that is.
You know where that
home
is?
Home of the?
The Dragons.
Oh, yes.
Yep, the Mighty Dragons.
Mighty Dragons.
Uh-huh, yep. And state champion basketball team is mostly what they're known for in sports, and a really killer marching band.
Oh, but, great.
Yep,
good,
anyway.
Good times.
And I was referred to his kids triathlon for my daughter who had just turned 7 by some friends who just said, you've got to get Annika signed up for this. You won't believe it. It's like a sporting event you've never seen before. It has equal parts sport and heart. And those are two things that speak to me, sport and heart. Like there's a heart in the middle of this sport that the kids are doing. And so signed her up and went. I had high expectations based on the reviews I was getting from some friends. But being there at the Miracle Kids Triathlon, which Tony created, I was swept up right away in what it was.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful and so pure. And I watched my daughter have the name of a child who was battling cancer written on her leg. Mm-hmm. And the volunteer said, okay, Annika, today you are racing for this child.
That's moving, isn't it?
Ooh, her name was Allie. I still remember it.
Oh, wow.
And we had gotten a picture of Allie in the mail because that's how Tony had set it up, that your kid is going to race for a kid who can't because
yeah.
she's too sick to do so. And I just remember that sinking into my head and heart, thinking this is someone else's child. And right now my daughter has a chance to do something, not just for herself, but for others.
Yeah.
And so went home and went on with life. And then a little boy in our community got cancer.
Oh.
And I reached out, well, a friend of mine reached out to Tony and just said, could we develop a team of kids here in Litchfield who would come and race on his behalf?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yes, of course. And if your school would allow it, I'd come out and do a motivational talk for your school, your elementary school in Litchfield. And he did. And I think there were like 70 kids from Litchfield who came in to do the Miracle Kids Triathlon. And
oh, wow.
I want to say like 2008 or 2009. And they raised a bunch of money and had lemonade stands. And the whole town kind of rallied around it.
Oh, that's great.
And everybody got hotel rooms because Litchfield's, what, an hour and 15 minutes from Lake Ann Park in Chanhassen. And something special was developing. And so I remember offering as a teacher and educator to Tony, if you need my help, or if you could use my help getting you into more schools, there you're onto something
yeah.
here. And it could be bigger than it is right now. And more families should know about this. And so he said, you know what? People are telling me that I could use some more help on this on this growing movement.
Yeah.
So I would take you up on that. And I started volunteering and then working part-time. And then we moved into the Twin Cities. And I ended up working full-time on that effort. And
so you left teaching?
Yep, left teaching.
Or did you retire?
Yeah, I was kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out because my kids were growing up and I wanted to be mostly at home. But I got kind of a book of business to grow the Miracle Kids Triathlon and add sponsors and add families and teams and raise money for the cause. And from that, I learned that if you can inspire a kid to do with a story that kid realizes, by me doing this thing, whatever the thing is, I can help someone else, that almost 100% of kids would say, yes, of course I would do that.
Yeah.
I want to help.
Absolutely.
They naturally want to be part of something bigger than themselves.
Yeah.
And even if they don't like exercising, we found that knowing that they could help someone else was enough motivation to actually get them out sweating and active. So seeds were being planted in me that later became Cycle Health from that work.
And were you seeing at the time as you were coming into this that there was something that could grow bigger? Did you have like a bit of a vision for that at some point? Did you say, were you seeing things that you wanted to do more and more?
Yeah. That when you combine in a kid sweat, belief and service to others, that there's something really profound that happens and can be life-changing.
And I can imagine you being a teacher and that level of engagement and the commitment to kids, which, I mean, the teaching is a you know, that's one of those professions where you don't get paid what you should.
Yeah.
I think people give you too much, you know, I think they kind of give you the hard time when they say, well, you get the summers off, so it's a great job, right? But it's not like you get the summers off, right? But there is a level, like, not everybody can be a teacher. You know, my sister-in-law was a teacher in Omaha, and it's you can just tell they had there's something different about people who are committed to leading and inspiring the youth of tomorrow, and because that's not in everybody's, you know, nature to do.
No, we're all gifted in different ways.
Yeah,
and those who are gifted with teaching and are doing some version of teaching, I love watching those people at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that had to fold in just perfect here too.
Yeah. Oh, it did. Because I had observed over the years teaching, I'd watched kids who had found a niche in life, something that they were passionate about, something they could sink their teeth into, and what a difference that made in the classroom.
Yeah. Because
they were more alert, more attentive, more hopeful, more confident. And whether it was a sport or something in the arts or something civically that they were involved in student council or the like, the difference between that type of kid and the kid who had not found anything that they loved to do yet and was mostly on the sidelines in life, either waiting for something that they love to do or not waiting at all anymore.
Okay.
And I thought, there's something in every kid that, if not inspired along the way and keeping the fire lit, will go dormant. And that's where you see the kids going digital.
Oh yeah.
All the, yep.
And that's tough. Gaming. It is. It's tough because it is almost like as a parent, sometimes I see that as the built-in babysitter.
Yeah, I know.
And it's an easy one to default to. And I always feel bad about it. And it's like,
I know. I have that right now with my 12-year-old boy and the Fortnite stuff.
Oh yeah. Julian is playing Fortnite. I don't know. First it was Five Nights at Freddy's or whatever.
It was Pokemon Go for a while.
Oh yeah.
Too.
That too. Like there's all these different things. It was like the Minecraft but Fortnite. I don't know what Fortnite
is. Something to it where I say, Ethan, it's time to come for dinner. And he'll say, after this game, Mom. And I'm going, huh?
Exactly.
No.
I can't save it. That's my voice.
My friends are playing.
I can't save it. And I'm like, well, it's not meant. I don't care. Like I'll tell you, I can turn it off. Like I can walk over and push the button that turns it off.
Right.
And then they just like, oh.
Yeah. I'm not saving dinner either. So.
I know. There you go. It's going to go cold. I don't care.
Right.
I don't care. That's fine.
Yeah.
So you start off as a volunteer.
Yep.
And
a mom.
And a mom. Well, you don't. Yep. You're always been a mom.
But I came at it as a mom.
Yeah.
And watched what it did with my own kid. And yeah.
And so you have that perspective. And then and the Miracle Kids story runs its course, and you and Tony move into Cycle Health.
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to take a job at the Red Cross. I was really close to taking a job at the Red Cross. Yep. And then I kept bumping into people from the other organization, from the former organization, and they would say, you know, what you guys were up to there was really special, and it just seems like there'd be more to do in that space. And we had sponsors saying, if you could do something special for kids that would really address a need in the community and that would rally families around it, the sponsors were saying, we'd want to support that. And it became an opportunity that was hard to ignore the pull of starting something new that would be aimed at getting kids active and inspired and motivated. And then we met these doctors, pediatricians, who shared with us what a challenging job and more challenging every day that they had, meeting with families who have largely gone dormant in physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversations are so repetitive now for pediatricians, and they go something like, okay, family, we've got to talk about how to get more active.
Yeah.
But without a hook to that message, it's a really deflating message for a pediatrician to give, knowing it's going to land without a way for the family to act on it. And it doesn't feel good for the family either, because they end up saying something like, you know what, if we knew how to do that or what that even looks like, we'd be doing it.
Yeah, we would have done it already.
Right.
That's a real hard space to be in. I mean, I know that even with parents that may struggle with watching their kids be inactive, sometimes there's not a great easy answer there. Because if there was, we would all do it. And in traditional stick and ball sports, they bait and reward in different manners.
Right.
And that doesn't always fit into the general population of kids that just want to participate or they want to find their own level of achievement. And it's not always about like making traveling something or, you know, being always on the best winning team. It's just sometimes I want to do something just because it feels good or because it makes me laugh or have fun with it.
In our non-scientific observations over the years working with kids in sport, we've come to believe that up to half of kids are wired for individual silent sports. And yet, when they start out in sports, those aren't available yet. Right. So in middle school, you have some opportunity for kids to do the silent endurance sports. There's mountain biking, which is really on the rise now.
Oh, huge.
And there's swimming and there's some cross country programs. But before that, there's like you said, the stick and ball and the traditional team sports. And if you try those as a kid and you don't find your way, many kids decide, I guess I'm just not an athlete.
Exactly.
They
get turned off to it. And what I found is also was that in some of those sports, like, so when my daughter went through swim program, you know, especially for younger girls, she ended up going through or experiencing some being put as an outcast because there was like body shaming. You know, if you weren't like the pencil thin girl that was like blah blah blah, which is not everybody, right?
No.
I mean, I'm not pencil thin, but it was almost vindictive, and that did not make her want to keep going. Even though I was coming out to her school and I was coaching, and I was like, that was my way of being there. It just wasn't a part of it. She actually enjoyed more playing park league softball. Didn't want to go actually even pursue playing like traveling softball, just like playing the, you know, nice, easy park league softball because it was easier for her. Mm-hmm. Again, because it was more rewarding. Mm-hmm. People were more open to it and to her, and she found more enjoyment with it. And because she found enjoyment, she wanted to continue.
Right.
And she wasn't going to do something that she didn't want to do.
Right. Well, there again, you have some people who are wired as competitors.
Yep.
And some people like me who are wired as achievers.
Yeah.
So I want to keep achieving new things, and I'm really motivated to try new things and stretch my boundaries and stretch my limits. But I honestly don't care how I stack up at the end of the day to anyone else. I don't look at the rankings and races, and I want to know, did I give it my all?
Yeah.
And so I can resonate with your daughter in that I want to keep doing the things I love, and I want to actually stretch the limits of those things. But to make it competitive and to judge the worth of the thing by how you stack up among others, that's actually not a motivator for me. And I don't think it's because I'm afraid of competition. I think same for a lot of kids, that the joy of completion when you didn't know if you could complete it, you know, you wake up in the morning and you have this thing on your calendar, and you, I think of that with all of our races that we put on for kids. How many of the kids wake up that morning and think, I've never done anything like this. I don't know if I can do it. And then they come and they conquer the thing. And you see at the end of the finish line that the joy is in the completion. And that's not the same thing as everyone gets a trophy, because that's not who we are either.
No, and that's that. I don't think that even comes across. There are people that I've found that don't want to do races that aren't quote unquote timed, or there isn't, you know, that type of structure with it. And I don't believe that's good for getting more kids into the sport. I think that there are places for those, but there are definitely good spaces out there that need to be populated by just the participatory sports,
right?
Non-competitive. I think that's important.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there are things that like is like for you that push you to do more and more, like running.
Yeah.
Right. Because you have, how many marathons have you run?
Seven
marathons.
And then I've gotten into ultra in the last so year and a half or so.
An ultramarathon. So you're doing, so for the people that don't know how long an ultramarathon is.
It's anything longer than 26.2. So I've done three of those now, and that's really where my excitement lies for my future in running.
So what motivated you to go to beyond marathon? Was it about? Was it a bucket list thing? Was it that you had just not found any? You weren't getting the same satisfaction out of it. What was the catalyst to move you from regular marathon to quote unquote ultra marathons?
Yeah, for me, I think it's going to be both. I'm signed up for the Twin Cities Marathon this year too, so I'm not going to abandon that. There's more I want to do in marathon. I think I can do better than I've done. And I want to just experiment with different ways of training.
Yeah.
But the ultra for me, actually, we have a board member at Cycle Health who went from road marathon into trail running. And and he told me that he's predicted if I would try trail running, that I would get hooked. And I said, well, that sounds like something I have to see for myself. And so I looked at at some races around the country, and this board member who encouraged me like that, he actually took a job transfer to Phoenix. And he was really excited about the trail running community in Phoenix and offered me to come down and stay with his family if I ever found a race in Phoenix that I wanted to do. And I found one that was speaking to me in February. Oh. I thought February is a good time to
great time
leave
to
Minneapolis and go to Phoenix.
Absolutely. For a race, mind you, it's not, that's business. You could have a write off. It's not personal.
Oh, no, this was personal. Yes. Yeah. This is a different lane. Yeah. And I thought it would be warm and dry and a good challenge for me. And it was going to be a 60K, so like 38 miles, right?
Okay.
And I was watching the forecast the week of the race, had my airline ticket already, and I had trained in the way I train, which is pretty organic. And the forecast in Phoenix was getting worse and worse and was calling for a little bit of rain and then more rain and then more rain, to the point where on Wednesday of race day, they changed the course. It was supposed to be a point to point with a net elevation decline of about 2,000 feet. And they found that they couldn't take us all the way down the mountain because the amount of rain that was being projected was going to make these little creek beds get too deep, because they don't have drainage
Phoenix,
too deep to safely pass. And so it became an out and back, which is like a down and then back up. And it made it a little longer. It was supposed to be 38, and now it turned into that 39-mile race. And I thought, this isn't what I signed up for at all, but I paid $130 for this thing. And I have an airline ticket, and I'm not going to be able to feel okay about myself if I don't go do it. So I did it, and it was in the 40s and raining all day. And you know what, Chris? I found it one of the best days of my life.
Really?
Afterward, do you know how tough I felt? As a mom of two with no pedigree in running at all, I hated sweating until I was 26 and had a one-year-old. And I couldn't, honestly, I couldn't fit into my clothes, which was one way of me telling myself that life is out of balance.
Yeah.
Another way was that I didn't have the energy to keep up with a one-year-old.
Ugh.
And so in that time, having a one-year-old and not enough energy to keep up with her, I signed up for a marathon 10 months later and figured out how to run, and then figured out how to love it. And so fast forward 15 years to this day in Phoenix that I thought was going to be warm and dry. It turned out to be cold and rainy and muddy. Ugh. And I did it. And the elevation, the everything. And I felt really, really strong that day.
Walk me through how you felt, because I know that races, there's a huge roller coaster of emotions that happens.
Yeah.
So were you just kind of like, okay, we're gonna get up to the start line, we're gonna go. And was there a point when you said, why am I here? I'm gonna scrap this. Or were you in the mindset for the entire 39 miles? I'm here, I'm doing this, I'm focused, laser focused, we're gonna get this done, this is what I wanna accomplish. Did you ever have like moments of doubt inside there that may have like kind of been the devil on your shoulder?
I never doubted that I would finish somehow.
Okay.
I knew that even if it became a slow crawl, that I was going to finish. At one point, I doubted my choice to not bring a headlight because I thought, you know, maybe it will be dark by the time I finish. It wasn't, but it felt like the whole day, and it took me, I think, 9.5 hours. The whole day felt like a series of problem-solving exercises.
Okay.
And because things do go wrong, the wheels do start to come off. At least they do for me, and I think for most in an endurance contest like that. And I didn't quite know what to eat and how much to drink and how many salt tablets to take and the whole bit. And so that plus the terrain always changing, and some of it was more technical than others, there was enough to occupy my mind on the current problem that I really tried hard not to zoom out and look at the bigger problem, which was that I'm trying something I've never done in conditions that are not ideal. Why did I do this? I didn't go there. Instead, chose to focus on just what is the current, like, what do I feel like I'm developing a blister? And if I did, I've focused on that. Do I feel like I need to drink more water? Let's focus on that. Systems check kind of the whole way. And then a couple of songs that I love on repeat and tap into my spirit a bit. And
is this your spirit animal? Because I've heard you have a spirit animal.
I have a couple of spirit animals, but the one in running, her name is Courtney DeWalter. And people who haven't heard of her should take a minute and look her up. The woman is a phenom in ultra running, and she kind of burst on the scene. She's local originally. She's from Hopkins, ran cross country here. But she ran a race called the Moab 240, mm-hmm. 240-mile adventure race, right, in the Moab Desert in Utah.
That's crazy.
She won it by 10 hours.
That's unbelievable.
Outright won it. I'm not talking about the female winner. She won it.
Beat everybody. First of all, that's a crazy distance to think about. That's like super ultra, mega ultra.
Right.
Like that's way beyond. But could you imagine running for that long?
No.
Like I don't know that. Well, first of all, who has the time?
Yeah, she's a science teacher, and I think she's now on hiatus from that because she's getting sponsored.
Oh, so she's a teacher too.
She was a biology teacher.
So is this? So am I sensing a trend that teachers are tough, go getters that can get everything done? Is that
are committed? You might be onto something. Yeah, you develop a strong constitution, right?
You kind of have to
in the classroom, right?
You
have, no, there's a lot being thrown at you as a teacher for sure.
You have to.
Yeah.
You're training for Twin Cities right now?
Yeah, so I'm training for the Twin Cities, and I'll probably go back to Afton and do the 50K there in July.
Okay.
And I may return to Murphy Hanrahan Park in October.
Is that the Surf the Murph?
Surf the Murph.
That's the best name, by the way.
Yeah, that's a cool name. I did the 50-miler there last October.
That's awesome.
That was a blast, too.
Any desire to do like 100-miler?
Yeah, I do. No, that's on my list, but
because isn't Leadville 100 miles?
Yeah, Leadville's 100 miles. I think you have to qualify for that one, if I'm not mistaken.
Could be. My buddy Tish does that. He runs those 100-milers. He looks like a waif, and, you know, he looks and maybe it's just with men. Why do all, like, longer-distance male runners, like, look like the skinniest little people, but they have, like,
the biggest
shaggiest beards. I know. I get that.
I know. I think is it Gary Robbins who does the Barkley Marathon? I think they're all taking after him.
Yeah. I don't get it. Like, Tishy, like, he started running. The first thing he did, he grew a beard.
Yeah, what is that?
I don't know.
Maybe they keep their energy gels inside their beard.
Something, like little birds? Like, they get, like, little pieces of popcorn in there? You know, it's like, we don't need to hold our food. We just put it in our beard.
Well, they say that ultra marathons are just eating contests with some running in between.
Yeah.
So maybe they are keeping their food in their beard.
It's crazy because they are the skinniest people in the world.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable.
Oh, you do see all shapes and sizes out on the trail, which I like.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And running is one of those things where it's like, you know, I know Tony found, that's kind of where he found his spirit animal a little bit. He didn't tell me what his spirit animal is, but but when he started running with his friend Frank that brought him out, that was kind of his beginning. And I always think that's easy because running is just going out and running.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be on a track. It doesn't have to be on a race. It's just like, just go out and run, and it could be, you know, kids playing tag, whatever it is, and it's just, it can be put in so many different ways.
Yeah, and when you start, so when I started at 26 with my girlfriend Jill, we both signed up for the marathon together. We walked 3 blocks and ran 1 block, you know, for a number of weeks, and then slowly changed the ratio to the point where, you know, within a couple months, we're running a couple miles and walking a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you got to listen to your body. But to your point, running can be, I think, for everyone.
Exactly. Right. And so I know that with Cycle Health, we have, when I first heard the name, I thought cycle, I always thought bicycle.
Sure. Yeah.
But with the Kitterod that's different. And, have you thought about making, like a kids running event?
So, on the name, so what we mean to imply there is that kids can create a new cycle of health.
Yeah.
And that's back to the doctors who are now prescribing our events and programs.
The RX.
Sweater X.
That's what it is.
Which I still pinch myself that that's actually happening.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, we're not going to do a straight running event for kids, I think, for a couple of reasons. We do like to have running in the events. Mm-hmm. I think all of our races have some degree of running. But there are a lot of blocks to kids, mental and physical, blocks and barriers to mm-hmm. kids liking to run.
Yeah.
And we just seen enough kids straight running before to know that it's just one more thing in a kid's life that they know pretty quickly compared to the other kids that they're, quote, not good at it, or I guess I'm not a runner.
Yeah.
So where we do have running, we build in challenges and obstacles and other things along the way that slow kids down or stop them in their tracks in the running.
Yeah.
And give them a chance to put their attention on solving the next problem and then moving on. And we do that both to amp up the fun factor of mm-hmm. the race and to give kids who aren't naturally runners of lovers of running, give them a chance to catch their breath for a minute.
Yeah.
Right. And then equalize the playing field a bit so that the finish line is not always about who's fastest. Because if you put enough obstacles in the way, they're going to trip kids up at different rates. And all of a sudden, you're not comparing who's a faster
exactly.
runner.
Yeah.
Right. You're seeing how much fun you're having. Right,
it almost looks like a warrior dash type of,
right.
you know, thing, but for kids. You know, like with bubbles instead of electric fences.
Well, right. That's a commitment I can make to you right now.
But no electric fences are going to be out involved?
No, never. But there's a documentary we've learned a lot from called The Rise of the Suffer Fests, which I recommend. Mm-hmm. It traces back the origin of those mud runs and warrior dashes. Which
yep. The began, dirty runs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. And the documentary maker set out with this one question: why do people with otherwise fine lives and jobs and incomes and families pay money to go get tortured on these obstacle courses
yeah.
for adults with the barbed wire and the water gushing at you and the tubes.
Fires.
And
like
the
you
fires.
You gotta run through fire? Like, oh, like no, uh-uh. Hard
and in
pass.
Great Britain, they can be even more severe.
Oh.
And he was skeptical of why are people doing this? What's kind of wrong with them, right?
Yep.
But he actually found in the documentary, and this isn't a spoiler alert, it's just a piece of human nature, that we've become so comfortable in our lives and in our cubicles and in our commutes and in our heated garages, right? And in our mm-hmm. remote controls, that we're never on the edge of danger or even on the perceived edge of danger in life like our ancestors were.
Okay.
And there's a craving inside us to have a little bit of edge in our life.
Huh.
A little bit of, oh, did you see that? I know. I almost got
it.
Zinged by that
yeah.
thing, right? So we don't want any danger at all in our events. I don't want to be misunderstood about that. But we understand that kids too, just like adults, have a craving for an actual adventure that
yeah.
they're not sure how they're going to make it out of. They've got to figure it out along the way because so much of our life is figured out, right?
Yeah. And especially with kids, you know, parents tell them where to go.
Yep.
And, you know, kids like always are following. And I learned recently that, you know, you kind of get into that 10-year-old age and that's when kids want to try and figure out their own way.
They do.
And my oldest son, Cole, is 10. And
yeah.
I see that like in spades right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, hey, I want you to do this. And he's like, well, I'm going to do that. I'm like, no, that is not what I said. And I find myself like being this authoritarian. But also, on the other hand, you know, being, you know, I kind of reach back to some of my youth coaching and my involvement with youth sports. And I'm like, okay, let them find their own way, and they're going to do it. And they're going to do it like twice as good as you ever wanted them to.
Right.
And so I think that's a big piece of what you guys have here and what's going great. So,
yeah. And I think as parents, we'd all be served well in our roles to look at what boundaries have we created for our kids, and are they actually serving? Are the boundaries actually serving? And the boundaries, I mean about where they're allowed to go, where they're mm-hmm. allowed to explore, how much responsibility they have. Because you can put a boundary around how much you ask a kid to do. And I think we're not asking our kids to do enough.
Right. Yeah.
They can do more than they're being asked to do in general. And they can go further. And I mean in space and time. They can go further in general than we're letting them go. So we have invisible fences for our dogs. They are not supposed to be for our kids too.
It's true.
Kids need to explore. And not that they shouldn't have boundaries, they should. But I'm always asking myself, do they have enough self-determination? Have I set the boundaries appropriately, but far enough for them, you know, far enough out for them that they're having to make their way in some part of their day?
Do you think that's a great point. Do you think that at some time that, you know, because you and I come from essentially the same generation.
I'm 42.
Yeah, I'm a little older than 42, and I'm not going to say anything more than that.
Oh, okay.
So I'm 47.
Okay.
So we kind of grew up, and you're from Minnesota, so we're both in that's kind of same space. I know that as a parent, I should let my kids go out and just go to the park, explore, do this, do that, and do the other thing. I hesitate to do so because I live in some level of fear of yep. what can happen to them.
Right.
And part of that, I believe, comes from, I would say, as Minnesotans,
yep.
we have lived through, I would say, we are like the Jacob Wetterling generation.
Exactly right.
And I there is a part of me that says, I know that there's no problem with me telling my kids to go to the park and go, you know, ride down to Kowalski's or do this or whatever. But there's also this in me that I don't know how I could live through that, knowing that two things. One, I could have prevented it by just saying, don't do it, which I know that's not like that doesn't help in the long run, but it keeps my kid here.
Right.
What do you tell parents to do to kind of fight out of that box? Because I find myself in that box almost daily.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like you've kind of got a little bit of a like lightning in the bottle and you have some wisdom into that. What do you tell parents like me that feel that kind of fear? How do I feel okay in letting go? There has to be something that I can grab onto to feel better about that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're exactly right about the origin of the change in parenting. It was the impetus for the big change in how we parent was the Jacob Wetterling abduction. We can trace it back. I was not far from his age when he was abducted, and I was growing up in Plymouth in a cul-de-sac where I was allowed to go out and ride my bike all day long as I was back for supper. And we didn't have cell phones. And my friends and I would go explore our little world. Right? The, mm-hmm. Maybe it was a 3-mile radius altogether, but it felt like it was the world.
Yeah.
And I remember my mom saying after Jacob Wetterling was abducted and then weeks went by and there was no resolution to that. And then months went by. I remember her and the other moms in the cul-de-sac saying, if that could happen in a small town where he was not alone mm-hmm. and it wasn't even dark yet, then what could happen here? Right? And population density that's bigger, and that what have we been doing to you kids by letting you go so far away?
Exactly.
And there was a reverberation that still felt today. And I would say that we even judge each other as parents by how closely we watch our kids.
Absolutely.
It's really interesting. And how many activities we've got them signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
And how much driving we do, right? We kind of say, oh, I'm just a carpool driver. But in some ways, it's a status symbol too.
It is.
Or
badge of honor.
See what a good parent I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. So I guess what we encourage is for parents to talk with the other parents that they're in the circle with because the kids are hanging out and decide, kind of have this open conversation together. So just ask, are you having trouble letting your son or daughter go out of the neighborhood, you know, without feeling just pangs of anxiety about it? Okay, good. Me too. So maybe we should walk the kids around or bike them around to, here's where we think the acceptable kind of boundaries are for this, your core group of friends. Mm-hmm. And now we do have phones. And now, I don't know about you, but I can track where my kids are on my phone.
I know.
And yet I don't want them to leave the neighborhood.
I know. You feel creepy. Am I tracking them? I put a square on their bikes. It's like, you can always see it. That's also so if somebody swipes their bike.
Sure.
So never steal my kid's bike. Any of you people
offline
out there listening.
Right, yes.
But
it's coming for you.
Yeah. So that's a great piece of advice, though, to talk to other parents and instead of, to try and get some level of acceptance there.
Yeah.
And understanding that's so important.
Yeah, because we're all living with kind of the same anxieties and realities and second-guessing ourselves.
Yeah.
But often we're not talking about them. And I think just opening up the dialogue among parents and then bringing kids into that and say, here's what makes us nervous, kids, and talk to them like they're real people because they are. And here's what we believe is at this age that you are, is the right circumference for you, is the right mix of safety and room to explore your world for you.
So by me asking you and articulating my fear, I'm taking a step in the right direction.
Well, I think so. Don't you think? Anything that gets said out loud loses some of its
power.
If you
say I am, then I'll feel better about myself.
Okay, well, you got that going for you today.
Well, Betsy, this has been a super interesting conversation, and I can't tell you how much I have enjoyed it. We went down some different roads than I had originally thought, but I think it was very informative and a lot of fun. For everybody out there, if you have not signed up your kids yet for any of the psycho health events, be sure to do that. Be not just because it's an event, but all the things that occur throughout the year. It becomes almost a cycle of life for them. And I would say the cycle is almost like in the seasons. And I think that's really important, and that will help us as parents to maybe feel a little bit better about ourselves and to help kind of loosen up some of those boundaries maybe we create for ourselves and help answer some of the questions we may not have answers to.
Yeah.
So
this is really enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And everybody, thank you for spending another day with us. We look forward to talking with you soon. Again, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you like what you hear, let us know. If you don't, well, you can probably share that with us too if you want to. So for now, I'm Chris Swartha, and Betsy, thank you so much for coming. Bye. Let me know when you're done. Time to get life, we can pick the time. You do what you want to do. Pressing no object cause I got you. Don't want to pressure you. Something that got me to appeal to you. Just gotta let me know. If you ain't with it, I'll let you go. Let you gotta let me know. I go, you go, we go. Let me know. I go, you go, we go. So you gotta let me know.